You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5. And Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395 6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. Now, while it is the Palestinian people who have paid a terrible price over the Gaza genocide and aggression against the occupied West Bank, it is important to take note the considerable social tensions and serious political differences that have emerged within Israeli society. Major social and political dislocations have opened up differences within Israel's population that already existed prior to these developments. Now, there have been huge protests which clearly reveal a very powerful level of discontent and uncertainty. This, coupled with heavy political infighting and harsh and caustic rhetoric about the future of Palestinians in Palestine, has put on spotlight deep and dark divisions that may just shake up the occupation to its very core. This is a topic of tonight's Spotlight program, but first, let's get started after this quick report.
The Israeli genocidal war on Gaza rages on, with the regime's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announcing an expanded offensive on the Strip. However, deep divisions persist among Israeli political and military leadership as they struggle over the direction and scope of the ongoing onslaught in the Strip. While some of the voices within the regime strongly condemn the war, others are taking an even more extreme stance, openly advocating for genocide. Former Israeli Knesset member Moshe Feiglin has called for the killing of Palestinian children and infants in the Gaza Strip, describing them as enemies. Feiglin says victory cannot be achieved unless every child in Gaza is eliminated. This comes as some former Israeli officials have taken an opposite stance.
Israel is on its way to becoming a pariah state among nations like South Africa was if we don't return to acting like a sane country. And a sane country does not wage war against civilians, does not kill babies as a hobby, and does not give itself the aim of expelling populations.
The explosive remark comes on the heel of former Prime Minister Ehud Olmert's grave warning.
What Israel is doing now in Gaza is very close to a war crime. This is a war without a purpose, a war without a chance of achieving anything that can save the lives of the hostages.
Another example of the growing divide within Israel's leadership and military ranks is the letter signed by nearly 1,000 Israeli Air Force personnel in April, urging the regime to end the war on Gaza. Beyond the political arena, the prolonged Gaza genocide is exacting a devastating psychological toll on Israeli soldiers, with mounting pressure from a regime bent on enforcing rapid, even compulsory recruitment. An increasing number of soldiers are buckling under the stress. Since the war on Gaza began in 2023, nearly 35 soldiers have taken their own lives. Meanwhile, the streets of Israel are witnessing a surge of anti-Netanyahu protests. Israelis have taken to their avenues, demanding a ceasefire and insisting that Netanyahu accept Hamas's terms to secure the release of Israeli captives. This outcry reflects mounting public frustration over a war that, according to many, sacrifices human life and moral integrity at the altar of political expediency. As this internal rift escalates, so does the suffering of Palestinians. In Gaza, where the flow of humanitarian aid remained blocked, civilians continue to endure unimaginable hardship, with essential supplies unable to reach those in desperate need. The bloody conflict deepens its toll on innocent lives.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
And now for our guests. Laith Maarouf, Executive Director for Free Palestine TV, joining us from Beirut. Mr. Saeb Shaath, author and West Asia expert, joining us from Belfast. Gentlemen, welcome you both to the program. I guess, Mr. Shaath, we'll start with you, if we may, welcome to our Spotlight program once again. So your initial thoughts about the spiraling, one would say, of the social and political stability of the Israeli entity, seen through the lens of these divisions that within the Zionist construct.
Yeah, it is. Even the liberal, supposed to be left wing, who is said it is Israel turning to be a pariah state, and it's a hobby of the army of killing the babies in there. He is the second, used to be the deputy of the chief of the Zionist entity's army, and he is controlling the West Bank. So he's not, you know, like someone out of the picture. He is from the same within the mechanics of the killing machine of the Zionist entity. But that in its own can show the divisions among politicians and communities of this Zionist entity. There are a group of people who came from around the world, encouraged by the British imperialists and the Americans, to loot the region and to have an advanced base in it for the Europeans, civilized West European settler entity with West Europeans values can shine in there. Against the barbarians who are supposed to be the Arabs, the Turks, the Iranians, and the Muslims, the rest of the Muslims in the region. And in that, these people from there, from Romania, Poland, Hungary, and that, each one wants a slice of the cake more for themselves. The Ashkenazi against the Sephardim. Now the turn is the Netanyahu led a group of right-wingers who are students of a religious school, Haredim, who are getting wages while not working, and they are not serving in the army, so they get the other communities to fight on their behalf, but they are raping the whole country and taking over the state. Netanyahu done a few battles, legal ones to save himself from the corruption cases against him, and that's why he allied himself with these Zionist religious factions. And at the same time, those people in there with Netanyahu taking over the courts, because the Supreme Court and the Zionist entity, it takes the place of the constitution. So this country, it doesn't have a constitution, and it doesn't have a border, because as a settler depends on the expansionism. And it wants to create what they call it the Greater Israel. And that's why the infighting within each other, who wants to save this entity now, which becomes pariah state, and to go back to politics as normal, with the Western Europeans to serve them, but it's too late.
Thank you, Mr. Shah. Mr. Laith Maruf, thank you for your patience and welcome to the program, sir. Now, these rifts and divisions, I don't know if you heard the soundbite earlier, Yair Golan, Knesset MP and retired general, says that Israel is becoming isolated more by the day, that a sane country does not engage in fighting against civilians, does not kill babies as a hobby, and doesn't set for itself the goals of expelling a population. Your thoughts on these growing and rare challenges to the regime from within that we have rarely seen. Okay, Laith, we don't have your audio. Can you check to see if your microphone's open?
Yes, sorry.
All right, go ahead, bud.
We shouldn't feel that this rift is big enough to make a difference because it's a bit too little too late right now. As we see, what's happening in Gaza is the final phase of the genocide. The United Nations just said that in the next 2 days, tens of thousands of Palestinian children will be dying from starvation. Mm. And this is just the beginnings of that. So these statements by some Israeli politicians right now should be counted in the same value as the statements of some presidents and prime ministers in Europe and North America over the last few days, declaring that they are against what Israel is doing while they were still supplying the weapons, and or it's too late. Now, they need to not speak up now. They need to take action. Similarly, within Israeli societies, those who are right now finally saying this is a genocide, it's too late for talking. It's now a time to take action. If parts of the Israeli society that wants don't want a full genocide to happen, again, it's not also because they don't want to kill Palestinians. Even the politician you just quoted is a Zionist, but they don't want it to happen in such ways that destroy the Zionist colony's credibility in the world. And again, now that is too little too late. The reputation of the Zionist colony is destroyed. There's no returning from this point either for the genocide in Gaza and or for the life of the Zionist colony. It is a pariah in the next years if this war doesn't end with the collapse of the Zionist colony. It doesn't have much life left in it because the rest of the world doesn't want to participate in any trade with it, doesn't want it around it. Nobody wants tourists from this country. And the people in the region don't want the existence of the Zionist colony. This is what is driving some of these politicians to open their mouth now because they see the end of the Zionist colony fast advancing in their face.
Interesting take there, Laith, and thank you. And then I'm glad Laith alluded to that. It seems, Mr. Saib Shah, that for every person you have condemning the genocide within the political or social apparatus there in occupied Palestine, you also have two people like Mr. Knesset member Moshe Feiglin, who said killing of Palestinian children, infants, is okay in Gaza, describing them as enemies. He said victory cannot be achieved unless every child in Gaza is eliminated. And we know this stance is not an exception. We've heard this time and again from a lot of Israelis. This polarization, though, while healthy for a functional democracy, it seems like it's quite different and should be much more concerning, to Laith's point, when afflicting a genocidal occupation.
I just want to object to the word you said, the functioning democracy. This democracy, according to you, is always led by generals. And the Netanyahu, who wasn't a general, he came on the back of the legacy of his brother, who was killed by the Palestinian resistance in Uganda at the time. So all of them, they have to come from this, within this genocidal machine. And this Zionist entity itself, They are thugs who fought in the Second World War with the British, and it's an army, and the British give them Palestine as a country for the army. That's the truth of it. Today himself, Netanyahu, who wants to stay in power, that's why he's keeping as much the war intensifying, with giving the green light for his settlers to grab the lands in Gaza in the future. He said the true loyal friends of his entity in the U.S. Senate asked him to eliminate the Hamas monsters. As well, he said, we changed the face of the Middle East. We reduced the capabilities of Hezbollah, and we brought down the Assad regime. Underline that statement. And shattered the axis of evil led by Iran. So and that is the new Middle East he's creating, which is, I alluded to a minute ago, that's the greater Israel. And according to, as well, I heard yesterday as well, a Zionist Knesset member, Tzvi Sakot, saying everyone has gotten used to the idea or the fact hundreds of Gazans are being killed in one night during the war, and nobody's bothered about that. He's talking about his own people within his own community, and maybe as well alluded to some Western audience, since Netanyahu government and his entity, is their current political vision is to eliminate every Palestinian, a child, woman, man in there, because they see in every Palestinian who's still breathing is the resistance. They don't want, how they're going to defeat and to have the Palestinian defeated by the final solution. What is the final solution? It's the same Nazi ideology, is eliminating everything, is breathing or alive in the Gaza Strip. That's what he is trying to achieve. And he is a dragon with himself here, the Western allies. This is where today is a lot of, in the last couple of days, you hear Macron or the Canadian or the British, or before that, the Irish and the Spanish, all of them jumping off the boat. They don't want to be with a genocidal state, which is their own population in the streets, accusing of each one of the government complicit and a partner in the killing of the Palestinians. And they can see, I don't want to go through each one of these countries. Each one of these countries till now, with all of these statements, is still in partnership and supporting the Zionist entity. The British talking about suspending the negotiation about the trade deal 2030, 5 years from now. So it's all a lot of rhetoric, but they are involved up to their neck in the genocide with the Zionist entity.
Thank you. And for clarification, I wasn't calling the regime in Tel Aviv a functional democracy, but I want to put the same question, if I could, to Laith. Laith, when I mentioned earlier, what may be healthy debate and divisions anywhere else in any other society, why does it seem that does not apply when you are a criminal organization in the midst of a long, illegal, and brutal criminal campaign, and that deep divisions can really hurt such a criminal enterprise, especially one that is funded from outside? And to your point, you mentioned earlier, it could speed up its inevitable demise.
Yes, well, think about the Zionists that are now in charge in the colony, the Netanyahu cabal and those who are around him, kind of like ISIS in control of Damascus right now, al-Nusra. There is no negotiating with somebody like that. The other politicians don't have, or political groups in Israel right now have no access to power as Netanyahu has, and they have militarized the settler movement, as we saw with the dispersal of hundreds of thousands of machine guns in the West Bank and inside the Zionist colony since October 7th and the Al-Aqsa flood. And Netanyahu had conducted a purge and a coup in all the military and security apparatuses of the state and the Supreme Court. So he has control of everything. He doesn't need to negotiate with anybody. And now nobody can of his opponents that we heard some of them now have any access to physical power in the state and or the streets. They can't fight the police that are all right now under control of Ben-Gvir, and the Kahanists have now been recruited into the policing force and what have you. So this is, you know, talk about change and fracturing within Israel is premature in that context. Mm. All we are hearing right now from these voices that is that they're too worried that the genocide went too far and it's going to harm the image of Israel. That's their only worry.
Okay, and Mr. Saad, what about the cracks we've seen outside of Israel from its support structure? Netanyahu saying the other day Israel cannot always rely on the U.S. for support, and the Donald Trump visiting the region a few days ago and leaving Israel completely out of his itinerary. And then you have France, the U.K., and Canada just yesterday morning saying that they will take concrete action if Israel continues to put a siege on all the humanitarian aid into Gaza and continue with this escalation, its military operations in the besieged strip. This is rhetoric we never heard. And to Late's point, just yesterday, they were funding the genocide. And now they're not just opposed to it, but actually threaten the regime with concrete action, whatever that, you know, may mean to them. It could mean sanctions. It could mean literally, I doubt it means military operations. But nevertheless, it's the rhetoric. It's unprecedented. Is this an indication that things are unraveling when it comes to Tel Aviv, both inside occupied Palestine and its support construct on the outside?
It's to put things in its head to understand it. Who is the military suppliers and supporter of the Zionist entity? United States of America, nearly 69% or 70% of the supplies and funding. Germany, around 28%, I think, or 27%. And the rest of 3% between Britain and the rest of Europe.
Yep.
So when you see the amount, and these two countries, the United States of America and Germany, didn't go as the Canadian and United Kingdom and France when they say an explicit warning, either you stop the war or face isolation and sanctions. I would love to see one of these countries actually starting sanctions. And they are talking about, even in the Irish Parliament earlier on today, about products out of the Zionist entity settlers in the occupied West Bank, which is a talk should be done 25 years ago, not today. So there's a lot of hypocrisy on the side of the European or United States of America is in the same thing. Once Israel is not needed as a function state, the United States of America will pull the plug and Israel will be gone. We got to understand this is a military, advanced military base in there in behalf of the United States of America hegemony in the region to control and to loot the area. Instead of East India boats used to go in the, a few centuries ago and to take the gold, today it's these sovereign funds of Abu Dhabi's sovereign fund or United States or Saudi Arabia or Qatar are protected or controlled through the Zionist entities, gun boats and stuff like that. And the money, as we witness, it immigrate every time Trump visits the area or an American official. $4.5 trillion left in under 3 days from the region. So all of that, the Zionist entities function is to guarantee that. But as I said, the Zionists themselves, they still believe the financial and the ruling Western elite, the Anglo-Saxon, they allow them to do whatever they come to their mind in Palestine. But saying in Palestine, as I said, Trump, before he was elected, he said, I was looking at the map, the Zionist entity, Israel, quote unquote, is tiny. And that is when he came to office, he was talking about allowing them to take over Gaza. He wanted Gaza for himself. He wanted to make the Riviera of the Middle East in there. And suddenly they're speaking about even annexing the West Bank for them and right. taking the from the parts of Lebanon, parts of Syria, through the corridor of David to Euphrates in Iraq. So they are talking about bigger project. Not we won't shouldn't be listened to the hypocrisy of the West. The West is involved with them.
We're practically out of time. I really want to get this last question. If you could, try to answer in less than 40 seconds. The Guardian had this article the other day looking at the brain drain leading to the departure of Israel of doctors and other professionals as a very worrying sign that some of Israel's elite already feel they no longer have a future in this country, that immigration is growing, particularly among high-skilled professionals within the high-tech industries. And guess who this leaves behind, Laith? The far right, the conservatives, what the article referred to as the traditionists, the Ben-Gavirs, and the Smotriches. How do you see these changing dynamics impacting the future of the occupation?
Definitely, there's at least 2 million Zionist colonists that left already over the last 20 months. Those that have second citizenship, that are mobile and can work online and can find jobs in Western European and or North American markets. And that had happened. There's no going back from that point. There's also, all this discussion that we had about Israel continuing with this genocide. The genocide itself is also accelerating the collapse of Israel. Hopefully, there will be people taking action as we see the opinions of people around the world are getting more and more angry. And very soon, there'll be a boiling point. And this is why these Western leaders are now taking these positions, because they're scared of what could happen in the streets of their own countries if they don't stop this genocide now.
Gentlemen, thank you both dearly, sincerely, for joining us on the program. Pleasure to have both of you on. Laith Maarouf there joining us from Beirut, and Saib Shah joining us out of Belfast. And thank you for tuning in. This brings us to the end of your Spotlight program. Stay safe and goodbye for now.
Start.
Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Tour the pitch.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Seekers of Sacred Meanings, Salam. Today, we reflect on the number 40, a number full of mystery, memory, and spiritual maturity. So, talking about numbers, 40, beat 40, 14, 7, the holy number in Islam, do you feel they can affect?
I feel that numbers can have deeper meanings. But of course, because we do not have the true knowledge of it, we should not overestimate at some point. But in some parts, we see that some numbers are being repeated. For example, number 7.
Yeah.
Have you noticed? The weekdays,
yeah.
The layers of I don't know what, this and that. This number 7 keeps repeating. And another number again, you mentioned, I guess, 40.
Yeah.
The number 40. For example, Prophet, he got his revelation at the age of 40. Was that an accident? A coincidence? What was it? Or for example, we keep hearing that do this for 40 days, don't do this for 40 days, this and that. So I think this has to do something.
So honestly speaking, I wasn't familiar with this number 40 existing so much. I heard about it.
Yes.
Like, I of course know that the special day of Imam Hussein, the 40 days after his martyrdom, has always been a great event for all us, the Muslims. But I haven't thought about it this way, that this number 40 has to mean something somewhere. What is the context? Why is this number 40 repeated a lot in Islam? Do you think there's a reason? I know that they say if 40 days you keep worshipping, then there are defects for you. But what is the reason for these numbers, and how deep shall we go into just knowing the numbers and applying them on our lives?
I think we need to think about them because there should be something. Like, come on, this 40 keeps repeating and repeating. I'm sure there is something. There should be some connection of it with our maybe can be something spiritual that needs the days. Because I still believe that numbers, we should not exaggerate them, but they can have some deeper layer of meaning.
So now that you mentioned the word of changing, I can relate that maybe after 40 days of worshiping, the transformation might happen. Mm-hmm. That change within you that you might be looking for based on Islam, based on the Islamic context, after 40 days, this transformation, this spiritual improvement, a spiritual change might happen.
And as we know that Islam is a religion that considers you as a human, as an individual, and also as a part of society.
Yeah.
And it considers all of your dimensions. So the dimension I want to talk about is like psychology. So we have the psychological dimension of us, which is quite unique, but also kind of similar among all of us. So I think this should also go back to some psychological effect on us. The number 40, it doesn't seem very hard.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound very easy either. So I think this is a very good way that keeps our mind disciplined and gives us some sort of direction to move.
Oh my God. You know, I just remembered an example. My mom keeps reciting Quran mm-hmm. every day, and one special surah, I think it's Surah Al-Baqarah. Mm-hmm. And once I was asking her, when did you start it? When this great habit started in you? And she said, years ago, or when we had, I don't know, a problem or something, and I wasn't even born at that time.
Aww.
She said, I heard about this habit in Islam, that if you keep doing something like reciting a surah for 40 days, it was like a tradition that you need to recite a surah for 40 days. And after that, may God grant you the wish.
Mm-hmm.
So she said, I did this for 40 days. After that, our problem was solved. Like, I got what I wanted from Allah.
Yes.
And then I don't know what happened that I kept doing this again and again. This got to be my habit. So now I can understand this, that also in the traditions of Islam, we have it. Keep doing something for 40 days. And then if by the will of Allah, you will be granted by your wish. And this, after all, can change to your routine. My
yes.
mom now, after at least 28 years, because I wasn't born at that time, at least 28 years, she's doing the same.
Wow.
So this habit, which is started by number 40, by just one wish, one little problem. And now we can see it being part of our life, being a routine and having that impact still on the life.
So that is a very great example, actually. I've also heard about this, something called like chile to
do. Yeah,
yeah. Yes.
That tradition.
To do something for 40 days. And I myself, as far as I remember, I did something and I did get the clarity that I wanted. And that is very peaceful. So, of course, it's not a 0 to 100 thing. We cannot say if you do this, it's perfectly going to happen. But the possibility increases.
Yeah, of course, it's possible. And this reflection and discipline, the other perspective to it is that even for small tasks, doing some little good things for 40 days, based on psychology, as you previously talked about, this reflection and discipline might happen within us. It's so normal that human being, whenever they keep doing something as an activity or a task, they will get used to the routine and they will take that habit within themselves. So after this 40-day routine, this discipline might happen. And whenever this discipline is something positive in Islam, the impact is inevitable.
Of course, because speaking of discipline, it does not only affect that little piece of puzzle of your life, it actually, as it says, it disciplines other parts too. So that's very interesting. Number 40. Let's have a break and we'll continue.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back. You're listening to Youth Station, and we're talking about the mystical number 40.
Yeah, and how it can improve us in our personal development. Have you ever tried doing an activity for not even 40 days, for some days? You kept repeating it. And have you seen the improvement?
Yes, just like last week. Me and my friend, we decided to have some little goals for us because we were falling behind of our lives. So we did something and we signed it and we only had to do it for 1 week. So we did that for the sake of 1 week. That was very fun. But since it was very short, at the end of the week, when the new week started, I was like, oh, I'm free. So that was not very practical and useful. But I have tried the 40-day thingy a lot, so many years ago.
And you could see the effect?
Yes. I think it was maybe 2 or 3 or maybe less. I don't really remember. But it was quiet. So back then, when I look at my ticks and the schedule, I'm like, oh my God, that seems so old. But it's still on my wall. So this number 40 does really work. So this is like you choose whatever habit you want to do for the 40 days. And then at the end of the 40 day, you either improve that habit. For example, if it was reading book, you improve it or double it. Or if no, you can keep the same thing. So you keep this 40 days. Now, this is apart from any calendar. This is apart from 30 days a week. It seems like you have created another dimension, another period for yourself, a new calendar for yourself. And it feels very nice.
Yeah, exactly. And this matter of repeating something, the matter of keeping to do one activity, will have its effect, of course.
Of course.
And when we just mix it with the Islamic context, with a promised number of 40, by promise, we still are not saying that you're surely going to get whatever you want after 40 days. But when it gets to be advised in Islam, in the Islamic ethics, we can say that, this way we can improve better since Islam has provided us with everything that we need, with just consideration into every needs and wants of us as human beings and citizens. We can make sure that something is going to await us by the end of these 40 days.
Just a little dedication and trust yourself. And do not only rely on the 40 days. Don't think that, oh, after this 40 day, I'm going to end.
Yeah.
But to have a healthy mindset, that 40 number can help you.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that we need to know that this is going to be ongoing. We have hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam who had said, the sky and the earth wept for Imam Hussein alayhi salam for 40 mornings. Yeah, we had this time, 40 days after the martyrdom of Imam Hussein. But after that, did everything finish? Do we stop thinking of Imam Hussein and what a great sacrifice he made in Karbala after 40 days?
Of course, no.
No, it's just a special time which is devoted to just knowing him more, to remembering him more. But after that, we do not forget. We just got used to consider the mindset, the ethics, the rules that Imam Hussein had in life. And then we keep doing the same. We change into better people after these 40 days.
Indeed.
And the other thing is that in a hadith from Imam Hassan alayhi salam, he mentions that the signs of a believer are 5. And one of them is the 51 rak'ah of prayer. The other one is 40 visitations. So knowing 40, and this by 40, it can include number 40, since in Arabic, 40 means this number 40. And at the same time, the reminder of Imam Hussein's martyrdom. Yes. So deep down in the history of Islam, we have this 40-day period repeated again and again.
Yes.
So how can we implement habits within us for number 40? And what are the good habits that can be applied into the lifestyle of a young Muslim person? Let's go for a short break and then we're going to name some.
I was too proud to see the truth and prostrate to you until I took the first step. And that's when you opened the doors for me. Now, Allah, I realize what I was missing by being far from you.
Welcome back to the episode devoted to number 40. Well, we previously started this part of the discussion that we can implement new habits within us and keep repeating them for 40 days and see the effect. Since in Islamic history, in Islamic recommendations, we have this number 40 repeated a lot. So what are some good habits that me as a young person can improve in myself?
Some basic habits that I remember I started were, first of all, reciting Quran daily. We don't need to go for big numbers. Don't finish a juz.
Yeah.
Just start with one page. And then if you feel comfortable with that one page, or even you can start with five lines, just start at your comfort zone. And then just when you're used to it, increase it little by little. And I used to follow, I'm still following the guide, that he's a very good teacher and all. He told us to repeat this for 40 days. So we do that for 40 days. At the end, as I mentioned before, we need to either improve it or keep the same. Or wow. If it was very hard, we can make it just one step or two steps easier.
Well, at least you can make sure that you have that habit.
Yes, yes. We keep it. We stick to it for 40 days. And sticking to it is the goal. That is the key, actually.
It's hard, by the way.
Yes,
it's not
it is
that
very
easy.
Hard. So you can choose one little goal. That can be, for example, one page of Quran. Of course, you might get sick during these days. You might have other problems. You're a living human being. So if anything happens, don't delete the habit, but make it little. For example, instead of one whole page, do it half page, but don't delete it.
Even one verse?
Yes.
With its meaning and with its reflection.
Yes, just keep it. Just stick to it for the sake of 40 days. And at the end of 40 days, you will look at all those tick marks. And in some parts, you have little crosses, but you know that that cross does not mean you forgot it. You just made it simpler for yourself. It just gives a very bright hope to you to continue. And then little by little, you build habits and then you build chain habits. That is very, very, very helpful. For example, you recite Quran. After that, you do this. After that, you have, for example, 5-minute walk. This becomes a chain of habit. This becomes the routine. This is what Islam wants us to do. And we're hearing it from influencers. They keep saying routine. Come on, that's just literally chain habit. That's what we are being taught our whole lives, but we keep ignoring it. So I think this number 40 is not the tool, but it is a very great tool that you can take with yourself and finish this journey, continue this journey, and reach to a better level.
Yeah, exactly. And every 40 in your life could be a doorway to divine light. We reached the end of this episode, and until the next time, walk that path with wisdom. Assalamu alaikum
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
We are in the small central city of Mahallat, a small town that is mostly famous for its flowers. But here, I've come across something that I'm sure you're going to find interesting too.
The city is famous for an ancient water spring called Sarchishme, flowing from the mountains in the north to the plain areas of the south. Many villages were built around the water spring since the Achaemenid era, eventually developing into the city that you see today. And this is where Mahallat, meaning several neighborhoods, gets its name from. It's no wonder that a city this old should have its own very unique souvenirs. Maybe some kind of sweet with a very interesting story about how and why it was invented. And this is what I'm telling you about today. Now sesame seeds and the oily paste produced from grinding them, called tahini, are known to all. But the kind of sweet they're turned into in Mahalot is definitely unique. Sesame seeds may be tiny, but they have huge health benefits. And this is probably the best way to include them in your daily diet, especially if you have a sweet tooth. Tahini gets its soft, creamy texture from the huge amount of fats in sesame seeds. Do not be alarmed, though. They are unsaturated, meaning that they are beneficial to the heart and your overall health. If you're not familiar with the term halva yet, you need to know that it refers to a kind of dense, sweet confection. There are many different types, but the one we're talking about is nut butter based made with tahini. Although other cities in Iran have their own versions, and you can always get some from the local supermarket, they come by no means close to the ones produced in Mahallot. Now, if you're worried about acquiring dodgy hips and brittle bones later in life, and you're thinking of exploring alternative sources of calcium, this tahini halva is a great place to start. It is crumbly and melts in your mouth, and you can keep it at room temperature, which means it can be your on-the-go snack. And don't forget, it used to be the food of Iran's brave and strong warriors. Iranians will not wait to have halva, though. In the absence of it, a mixture of tahini and grape syrup, called ardeshire, is considered a perfect snack. Now, when it comes to a traditional Iranian breakfast, tahini and the halva made with it have a very special place. Kisumish Ahmadi for Iran.
Reza Boulevard connects hundreds of cities together in the north of Iran. And one of the interesting features of this part of the country is that cities are built so tightly close to one another that it would be very difficult to distinguish the limits between them. For instance, right now I have one foot in the city of Nur and another foot in the city of Royan. And actually, it does feel kind of weird being in two cities at the same time.
Royan, formerly known as Alamdeh, is one of the favorite hangouts for those traveling in Mazandaran along the coastal route which connects the northern cities of Iran like a belt. Royan is the center of Nur County. With a population of just a little more than 6,000, the city hosts hundreds of thousands of tourists, especially in Iran's holiday season like the Nowruz and also in summertime. This tiny city in the north of Iran faces the Caspian Sea from the north and the beautiful Hyrkanian forests of the Alborz mountain range in the south. As I said, one of the things that the Royan region is famous for is its mountains, which are covered with the dense Caspian forests. By traveling along the road which passes through the Royan forests, you can see one of the world's unique natural environments, which is exclusive to a region known as Hyrkania, a green belt which is stretched along the southern coast of the Caspian Sea and a small part of the Republic of Azerbaijan.
Alpari is the name of one of the famous natural attractions in northern Iran. It's located in the heart of the Royan forest. And unlike other waterfalls that pour down in a 90-degree angle, the Alpari is more of a combination of swirling streams that pour down in between the rocks in a 45-degree angle.
The dazzling beauty of the region owes itself to the situation of the Alborz mountain range, which acts like a gigantic wall that prevents rain clouds of the Caspian Sea from escaping to the other side, thus creating abundant rainfall, which eventually results in the creation of this green explosion.
Lavij, a mountainous area near the city of Nur, a place famous for its honey production. But as you can see, it's winter time and the bees are sleeping.
And besides, I'm not here to talk about honey because it's widely produced across Iran. Instead, I'm here to take you to a place which I'm sure you haven't visited before.
In addition to honey, Lavij is famous for its natural hot water springs. The water that boils from the ground contains a mixture of sulfur and minerals, which are believed to have miraculous healing effects on skin problems as well as skeletal pains. Mazandaran is a gifted land, full of attractions. This beautiful province presents a variety of choices for tourists and travelers who want to experience a different environment, the land of the sea, the forests, and breathtaking landscapes. Amir Mehdi Kazemi for Iran.
Desde el corazón de Asia Occidental, la hora de Irán te sumerge en el mundo persa. Conocerás su cultura y posición en el mundo.
Hola, queridos oyentes, bienvenidos a una nueva emisión de La Hora de Irán. Es un placer estar con ustedes. Como siempre, agradecemos a todos los que nos siguen en cada programa y a quienes se unen por primera vez. Les recordamos que pueden participar y enviarnos sus comentarios y mensajes a través de nuestro sitio iranradio.ir. Hoy tenemos una programación especial para ti, diferente a los programas anteriores. El programa de hoy es en memoria del comandante mártir Qasem Soleimani, el comandante iraní que fue martirizado por los Estados Unidos de Norteamérica el 2 de enero de 2020. Así que no se despeguen de la radio. Vamos a empezar con una conversación sobre la personalidad del mártir Qasem Soleimani. Les invitamos a escuchar la primera parte de este programa especial.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. En el nombre de Dios, el misericordioso, el clemente. Muy buenas.